I'm Anne Van Dam, and I'm a professional golfer. And the thing that I panic about is missing a tee time somewhere around the world because I don't know in which time zone I am.
Shalom, Mr. Howie.
What is happening?
Nada mucho.
Yeah. It's quiet.
Yes.
It's gorgeous out here in Phoenix. Fall in Phoenix.
Absolutely beautiful right now.
Fantastic. And I just had a hard ride. I've been riding a lot, finding some new routes here with my gravel bike.
Good.
And my guest today, she rides, but not as a professional. She's a professional golfer. And we've never had a professional golfer near me, or because of some old stupid thing I did way back in the day at ASU. No, we've never had a female. We rarely have female guests because it's like the Mike Pence podcast. But long story short, today's guest is Anne Van Dam.
Excellent.
From not from Sound of Music. Not to be mixed up with Sound of Music.
Not even close.
Yeah, I think everybody with three names was in the Sound of Music. Yeah. So that's how I think of Europe. So Anne Van Dam is a Dutch lady and an LP in social leverage, if you can believe it. And
I do.
And the story of that is her manager is a very good friend of mine.
Huh.
Michael.
Nice.
Or Michael, you know, with the Dutch, with their proper names. And he discovered her back in her teens. And Michael's an incredible golfer himself. We love golf, you know. You were an investor in golf now, weren't you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So Knut and I, one of our first hits was golfnow.com, which was bought by Comcast. It was a Phoenix company, and we were the open table of golf. Still are. 95% of tee times, Knut, are because of us.
That's amazing.
The work we did in 2005. If only we knew.
The work I invested in.
Yes. we sold a little early, but it was a win.
That was
so golf is near and dear to us. Knut loved the game. You don't play that much anymore.
I love the game. It doesn't love me that much.
No, but you love the game. Knut and I would play six times a week, five times a week at ASU during our MBA program.
At our craziest times, yeah.
Yeah. And ASU has turned out, and U of A have turned out a lot of tremendous pro golfers. Back when we played ASU, Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, they were all at Stanford. Well, Tiger was at Stanford. Phil was at, we were doing our MBA. Phil was at ASU.
He was there at that time?
I remember those guys on the 10th hole. That course is no longer. On the 10th hole, it's par 5.
Uh-huh.
We would just be bunting out our drivers. Taylor Made had just come out with a non-persimmon club, and there was the Big Bertha was right around the corner. So this was what year?
'90?
Yeah.
1990s.
And I remember hearing about Mickelson. He was much younger. We were in the MBA program, and we were on the 10th tee. It was a really tough course, correct?
It had some tough holes.
It was Pete Dye design. And so it was treacherous back nine with a lot of water and weird bunkers. And it was built in between four rows, like a square grid, and it was cut out of like a hole that SRP had donated to the school.
Right.
And we're sitting on this 10th hole, and we played it. Haunts you, me, Tommy, we played it as a par 5. Like you hit a drive.
Right.
And then you hit another, like a 3-wood or a 5-wood and a wedge.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, and I hadn't seen anything like this before in my life because I hadn't been around pro golf and it was a persimmon era. And Tiger and Phil are practicing. I guess Stanford was in town. And Phil hit a shot pre-Metal Woods. He hit a shot, and probably a ballata ball. He hit a shot that started out so, he took a line on a shot that we had played the course every day. He like brought a shot over the road and cut off like 200 yards. That was the last time I felt like I wanted to play golf ever
again.
And
that's when he realized he was destined for greatness and we were not in that game.
I have another Phil story. One more Phil story. We're playing in Tucson. He's on pace to shoot a 59 and we're on like the 15th hole. And Of course, Larry David Howard over here. I go, oh my God, if you par in, you could shoot a 59. And I think that broke all kinds of taboo rules. And we'll chime in on this in a little bit. He proceeded to duck hook a drive. And I think he finished like 8-7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have that effect on your on
yeah,
your
yeah. I immediately golfers. Cut my hair so in case I ran into him again, he wouldn't recognize me.
Yeah.
So we have not spent much time together since then.
Wonder why.
And but anyway, so those are my two Phil moments.
Excellent.
I have not played golf with Anne. It's funny because she is panicked about missing a tee time. You always wonder about this. They're flying all over the world and time zones. You know, I got to imagine Anne being involved, and you miss a time zone. They're pretty strict over there. So we're going to talk about golf. Investing, and her significant other has a cloud kitchen business in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And as an LP in my fund, she reads our quarterly letters and is intrigued by a bunch of the companies. I share companies with her. We finally caught up by phone, and I'm excited that she's in L.A. Practicing right now, resting on the way to head over to the Middle East to play. So she doesn't have to give you all her background. She was born in 1995. Like I said, she's a pro Dutch golfer. She's played in the Olympics. We'll talk about that a little bit in Tokyo during COVID. And she's been on the LPGA Tour. I don't know. Oh, she turned pro in 2015. And she had a lot of success. But I'm interested to talk about the grind of it all. We know how hard this is just to be average players. But to compete at that level is super interesting. And we'll talk a little bit about life on tour and investing. You ready?
Yes, I am.
Knut, let's get Anne on the horn. Anne, hello.
Hello, guys.
So, Anne, is it Knut or Knut?
I would say Knut.
See, it's 50-50, and she's European. So why is the K silent, Knut, to most people?
I don't know.
So it is Knut.
Yes,
is Knut a name in it? I don't think the Dutch Knut is a name in...
Not that I know, but Anne might be able to answer that, but definitely in Germany.
It's a German name. Okay. So, Anne, the favorite city when you're not at home is?
I would say Sydney, Australia.
Oh, it is. It's far. And what is it about Sydney? Is it just the lifestyle, the weather, the coffee, the food? What is it?
Definitely the coffee first. I think traveling so much, I definitely pick my favorite country in the world for coffee, which is Australia. So that plays a big part. Other than that, yeah, I just love the laid-back lifestyle there. The beaches, surfing is good there. The food is incredible. Definitely, they have definitely four seasons, which I love as well. So overall, a great place, but yeah, unfortunately, very far away.
When I was in Sydney, I just noticed a lot of people running. I don't know if it was from the law or to stay in shape. You know, it was just people running everywhere and in running gear. So I don't know if that's what they do when they plan to steal something. They put on their running gear or they were just healthy. It's a very healthy town. So what is your favorite golf course in the world that you've played?
That is actually funny because I would say I get this question a lot. And I would actually say my home course back in Holland. It's called the Roosendaalse Golf Club. And it's just a beautiful old tree line, fantastic maintained golf course. And I can play it 36 holes a day, every day. And every day I go back in the season, I always go and play around. And it never gets boring.
Have I played that course with Michael? Is that Michael's home course?
No, Michael, you probably played either Hilversum or a Link style golf course. No, this is a little bit more east. So hopefully next time you're in Holland, we can you can try it out and give your opinion.
You cycle. We were talking about Pedal Mafia earlier. When did you start cycling? What do you like about it?
I actually started cycling back when I was in high school. I was in all athlete school only. And I had a lot of my friends, they were either BMX athletes or velodrome athletes. And they did a lot of their training, obviously, on the road. And I always thought I could keep up with them and join them for their training on the road. And I quickly learned that that's not the case. But yeah, there I definitely created the love for cycling. Holland is a great place for cycling. We have beautiful bicycle lanes everywhere. You can technically ride from every city across
that's
the
true.
City. And yeah, that's where I love cycling. And especially here, spending my time in very warm climates, either in Florida or California, it's a lot of lot of great writing out here.
And what's your favorite course just to play? Forget tournament golf. What's your favorite course to play in the United States?
I would say my home course back in Orlando. It's called Lake Nona Golf and Country Club. It's always in fantastic shape. It's basically designed for professional golfers. So for us, every little grass piece is growing in the right direction. The greens are always extremely fast. They host a lot of fun events for us as pros. So yeah, for me, it's a fantastic place to practice and a great golf course to play. Always, because it's in such a fantastic condition.
Who's the best golfer you've played with on the PGA Tour, or the best golfer you've ever played with?
That's a tough question. I've been very lucky that I've played with very, very great golfers. But I think the time where someone actually made me nervous was playing with my hero, Suzanne Pedersen. She's a Norwegian golfer, one of the best ever played in the women's game. And I got to play with her right before the Solheim Cup, which was in 2019. Because I was very close on making the team, and then they paired me up together with her.
Uh-oh.
And I was so nervous, and it was Scotland, so it was rain, it was a lot of wind, and I was like, oh man, I have to deal with it as well. And I went out and shot the easiest 800 par of my life, and I think that cleared a lot of things. But and then I got to play with her as a partner in the Solheim Cup, which was even more nerve-wracking for me, because I knew it was going to be her last tournament as a pro, and last Solheim Cup as a pro. And then I had the honor to play with her, so I didn't want to mess up, but I did pretty good there as well. But that was definitely some fun moments.
I've met her once, and I can assume she can be pretty intimidating on the course.
Why?
I don't know. She's got a tough look on her face.
Wait a minute. She's Dutch or
she's Norwegian.
Norwegian.
Suzanne Pedersen.
Every Norwegian has a tough look. Dutch are so friendly, and then you meet a Swede and Norwegian, and it looks like they have a shit that they haven't made in like 3 years. Except you, Knut. So what is it like to get nervous? My son, who never seems to get, obviously golfers get nervous, and even I. What is the thing that you do when you get nervous? Do you think what's the hiccup that happens with nerves?
I think over the years, what I've learned to do is the main thing is just accept it, accept that it's there, and acknowledge it. Uh-huh. You know, you realize in certain moments when you have a lot of adrenaline, you almost want to push it away or block it out, which is never going to work. It's better to stand on the tee box and be like, look, I'm hella nervous. And just say, okay, I know it's there and I'm going to accept it and I'm going to work on it as best as I can. And for me, it's always going back to your breathing. Breathing does a lot in everything in life, I would almost say. And, yeah, just to control your breathing, slow it down, and really focus on where you want to go, where you want to hit the shot. Because there's always water left or trouble right or out of bounds past the green. There's always something you don't want to hit your ball towards. So for me, the main thing is focusing on my breathing, slow my breathing down, and really focus in on the smallest targets as possible. And yeah, then just hit and pray sometimes.
I just got back from Ireland. I have to say, there's just not really golf. You're just the sounds in your head are. I don't know if it helps some people, but it's a different form of like aggravation. So I saw a shot where you hit like the club was upside down. You were next to water, and you kind of flipped the club over, and you hit this pure shot. Do you remember that shot?
Not sure.
Well, you hit a shot off the toe, like you flipped the club. And you hit like a shot that was incredible off the toe. Do you practice trick shots?
Over the years, I've practiced many trick shots playing on tour. Yeah, you just get very creative. I have to say, as a kid in practice, you're way more creative probably than I am now, because you're just chipping with your friends. You're putting the ball against a tree, under branches, in bushes, and just try to get it out. And that definitely slows down a little bit as you play more golf and you turn it into your profession. But yeah, keeping creative is very important. There's so many ways you can play golf. So the most creative you can be is definitely going to help you.
Do you remember a shot is there a shot that you remember that was the best shot I've ever hit as a professional golfer?
Oh, if I have to pick out one.
It's hard, but like, there are times I hit the ball, I go, whoa, I wish someone had filmed it. Like, do you, like, Like, is there a shot in a tournament that you made that you had to make that you remember?
I would say the one that kind of sticks with me is definitely some shots I hit down the stretch in my first, when I won my first tournament out on the European tour. Because it was in my second year on tour and I wasn't really playing that well. And it was the first time I was in contention in the final group on Sunday, and it was in China, and I was kind of trailing the whole time, and yeah, I just hit, you know, it was the first time for me being in contention, so I was very uncomfortable with that to start with. And then, yeah, I just hit some very good shots down the last three holes to win it outright, and I just remember walking off the green, not really knowing what just happened, and kind of recalling those shots, where later I saw them back, and I was like, wow, that was actually really good.
Did they give you one of those big checks?
I think they did. I think I kind of lost that in the whole blur as well. But I know.
What is that check? If you lose that big check, can someone cash that check if they find that big check? So what it was the prize money, if you don't mind me saying? Like, I'm trying to understand European LPGA prize money.
I think they're the main prize. I think it was 50,000 euros.
So it's like $4,000. Well, 50,000 euros meant something back then.
I know.
They're usually about $50,000.
So that is a big, fun paycheck. But so what is a woman's purse today? What does a woman win on the LPGA and a U.S. tour event right now?
On average, I would say you win about $350,000.
That's real money.
Yeah.
And what's the biggest check you've had on the U.S. tour?
I think it was close to $70,000.
Oh. That's great. And so is there someone back in the clubhouse that just from the government with a cap on that takes the taxes out, or how does that work?
No, unfortunately, it goes all automatic through our tours portal. And
come on.
They do pay pretty quick. So if you finish normally on Sunday, most of the time it hits your bank account on Tuesday or Wednesday. So sometimes that could be quite fun.
Okay. So but the taxes are taken out, so you can't mess with it later?
Yeah.
Got it.
And so, for example, if I play in Europe, they take the percentage already off where in the country that we played in. For example, Spain is maybe 20%, UK is 25%. So they take that away automatically. But because I live in the US and I pay my taxes here in the US, you get the full amount. I think they only take the state tax off. And then at the end of the year, you kind of have to translate everything, which it's a huge mess playing all over the world and in every state and every country in Europe.
So you were explaining to me when we chatted that I never thought of this because I'm an idiot and I'm a guy, but it's different in women's golf because you're right. You have to think about being a mom and taking time off. Like, so the LPGA is just so different than the PGA in that do most women just quit at a certain age?
It's different. Some players, they don't have kids. They play like the men. They continue playing. Some they have kids and come back on tour. We have a great, how do you call it? Like daycare system.
Oh, good.
Where you can basically just drop your kid off in the morning, go play and pick it up after, which is all funded by the tour, which is great. So you have that option. And some moms out there do that. Others, they get kids and they quit. So there are definitely a lot of options, but it's definitely different than most of the guys on the PGA Tour. They have great prospects on playing on the Champions Tour. And yeah, they can play pretty much for as long as they want.
And so I know Callaway's a sponsor. How do you work with sponsors? How does it work with sponsors? They approach you. How and who are your sponsors?
So for me, I was pretty lucky. I created most of my sponsorships by personal connections, either playing with someone when I was younger. We have a big company back in Holland. It's called Pon. And I was lucky that that they came on my path when I was younger. And when I turned pro, that they immediately started sponsoring me. And same as some of the other brands, sponsored by a big bank back in Holland, AV. And most of those, you know, connections I made on a personal level, either playing with the people, knowing them through another friend. And for me, that's always important. I always try to find companies that fit me as a person and people that I just get along with. And I almost see it more as you know, an extended friendship than something, a very business-like decision where, you know, okay, I have to do 10 days for this company and I have to smile when they ask me to smile and, you know, say these things for a commercial or whatever. Luckily, I never really had to do that. Of course, sometimes it is part of some of the contracts or some of the deals you make, especially now with social media. I get a lot of different contracts or giveaways or some stuff like that. That's, it probably fits me the least. But I always try to have, you know, that personal connection that most of the time your contracts run for many years.
You work for yourself, so there is a lot of downtime. It's not, you're not a corporation. So what do you do in your downtime? Because you practice, travel, golf. So what is it that you do?
Depends. If I'm traveling a lot internationally, I would say I just sleep a lot, try to get adjusted to the new time zone and rest up a lot after events. Actually, the last 2 years, I really started enjoying reading. I never really loved to read back in school, but I really started to enjoy reading. So I read a lot of books on flights. Nowadays, you know it as well. People get into podcasts, so it's also easy to listen to on planes or in downtime. And I've always been very, very active, very sportive. So if I have the chance, I'll ride my bike. Sometimes long rides, sometimes short rides. So if I have the chance, I'll definitely love to ride my bike or go for a run or something like that, workout-wise.
And investing. So what piqued your interest about investing? And when did that kick in for you? Like, when did you realize this is something? And obviously, it sounds like your boyfriend has a restaurant, Cloud Kitchen. What kind of stuff excites you about that?
Well, it's funny how it all started, because I turned pro when I was pretty young. I was 19 years old. And you basically start making money straight out of high school, which was definitely weird at some points. It was also very nice, but it also was weird. So at some point, yeah, you just collect money. And because I'm playing so much, it's hard to keep track. And at some point when, Michiel came on my path and, he's done great things for me. You know, he sat down with me once and he said, you know, obviously, I've been investing for a big part of my life. And if you ever need help exploring different things, you know, I'm here for you and I'm ready to talk. We first looked into maybe buying some real estate in Amsterdam, which at the time, you know, prices were rising and they're still rising. So that never really was the right thing for me to do at the time. And then, I got into social leverage through Michiel and started investing through there. And along the way, I think I met so many people, and that's one of the things I really love about golf. I meet so many interesting people with different businesses, and I'm always very interested to hear their story and see, you know, if it interests me, if it's something that I love to do. And when I started dating Nick, my boyfriend, he has such a cool concept of kind of like a WeWork for restaurants in prime dense populated areas in LA, and you know, you out of nowhere, get hooked into a whole new world of a concept, which I think that's what really interests me. Sometimes you get interested in things that you never even thought about before, like whatever, NFTs or crypto or stuff like that. So that's definitely what interests me right now.
And what do you read, or is it just, you know, working on his project with him?
I'm definitely, I think, a sounding board for him. You know, sometimes for him here, a different opinion. Obviously, I travel a lot. I use a lot of different apps, different services. So for him, it's sometimes good to understand from a customer perspective what works and what doesn't work. He's trying to set up his whole rewards program. And with me traveling so much, I have accounts at American and Delta and all these different food apps like Uber and stuff. So you kind of know what works and what doesn't. If it takes too long to set up, if you have to put too much information in, if you get too many pop-ups with advertisements on your phone. So it's definitely fun to talk with him about those things and also learn about a complete different business that I had no information about before.
And so just walk me through his business.
So his business is called Colony. And you can kind of see it as kind of an Amazon warehouse for food.
Mm-hmm.
Of Colony as a food court with a single point of service. Like I said before, it's kind of like a WeWork for restaurants. So what he does together with his business partner, Dimitri, who's also a good friend of mine, they turn big buildings, kind of warehouses in very dense populated areas into 24 or more restaurants. Huh. So they all have their individual space. It's tough for people to realize once you actually get there how it works. But easily explained, they all have their own individual space.
Right.
And for a customer, you can walk in. Technically, you walk into a food court, but you just see like a reception with kiosks. And there you have the option to order, you know, from 30 plus brands. So it's cool if you're with a big group of friends and everyone wants to get something different to eat, and you can just pay in one order and all the food comes out at the same time. But they were mainly designed right for COVID for pickup and delivery. And then COVID obviously hit, which was for them a huge success, where they really started trending. And now a lot of people in the area and in West LA where they're based now really started to get the concept, which is, it's really cool.
So a restaurant doesn't have to sign a long-term lease. They can go with their favorite four or five dishes and get a kiosk.
No, so what happens is because it's all individual spaces, individual kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
For example, restaurant like Goop Kitchen is in there, a big brand. And they close the lease for, I'm not sure. I think the minimum lease is 1 year.
They have
that kitchen. But yeah, some leases go 2-3 years.
And the idea is to attract a lot of people to this place for all those vendors.
Yes, more and more. Like I said before, it was designed for delivery and takeout. But now, the major component is actually the ability to walk in as a customer and mix and match on a kiosk from, you know, over 30 plus brands and dine in on a cool patio.
Very cool. Switching back to golf, what is exciting about the industry? Like, what do you see? Is it product? Is it fashion? Like, is there anything? Are you bullish on golf?
What I love about the golf industry, I think it attracts a lot of different people, a lot of different cultures. Everywhere you go in the world, you can play golf.
Mm-hmm.
And I love playing golf with kids. I love playing golf with my family. I love playing golf with people I've never met before. Just on a random golf course and hear their story out. And it's actually fascinating that all these different kinds of people can share the same sport that they love.
And what about like trends going forward? It's, you know, there's a few big brands and it's very little true innovation. It seems mostly around the ball and the wedges. But fashion seems to be really becoming fashion forward. What's the biggest change that you've seen in women's golf?
I think on tour, you see girls wear a lot of cool stuff. You know, it's not the typical long skirt, long pants, polo shirt covering the shoulders kind of stuff. You really see a lot of cool brands. I'm sponsored by Kjus, or Hughes. I'll probably, Knut will correct me. It's a Norwegian ski brand that has awesome golf gear of very high quality. And just to see there, I've been also with them for 8 years now since I turned pro. And just to see their translation over the last few years with the quality, but also the cool colors. It's more of a tight fit. The skirts and the shorts are a little bit shorter. Everything is a little bit tighter, you know, more popping colors. So yeah, I think when you go out to an event, it's definitely fun to watch. And yeah, if I see other brands as well, obviously you have Nike, Adidas, they always do cool stuff for the girls. And you have a new brand coming up, Lindeberg. Also, a lot of girls are sponsored by them. And yeah, it's fashion. You see a lot of girls helping with designing of the clothes within these companies, and they get really, really attached to it in that way. And it's definitely cool to see the trend going.
And fitness too, right now. Like, so how does weights and fitness and stretching play? This is like the biggest part. Is this something that just changed the most?
Well, you definitely see in the men's game, you know, it started in like the Tiger, PJ Singh area, where they really started working out and becoming fit. And now, yeah, I would say 90% of the guys that come out on tour that are, you know, in their young 20s, they hit the ball a long way and they come out and they, you look at their body and you can think, well, they can play any sport they possibly want. And with the women, you see that translation as well. Obviously, it's not that physical yet. You know, distance is not as big of a role right now in the women's game as it is in the men's game. I think in the men's game, if you don't hit it a certain yardage of the tee, I would say 280, 290, you know, you're going to have trouble competing just because the guys hit the ball so long and they're just wedges into short holes. Then when you're coming in with longer clubs, that's harder. Where in the women's game, you know, over the last 8 years on tour, I definitely seen the courses get longer. Conditions get a little bit tougher. But it's not as of a big component yet in the women's game. I think for the future, it definitely will be. There are girls, I tried to be the first girl to crack average of 300 yards in a regular season. I think last year I finished at 298 or something like that. So I got really close. But yeah, there are definitely, I would say, a handful of girls that are really pushing that 300 yards average, which is really cool to see. And yeah, if you see how hard everyone works on their body to keep in good shape, you have to realize we play, you know, close to 30 tournaments a year. Some girls even play more. With all the travel that comes with it as well, it's very important to maintain your body in a way that you don't get injured. I think for everyone, that's the number one priority, is not get injured. And after that, it's just optimizing flexibilities to help you better with your swing, or things that you're working on, or faults that are in your swing that are caused by short muscles or tightness or something like that. So I would say 70% of the girls, they travel with their own physios and trainers. So knowing that, you can clearly see how important it is.
Yeah, well, so what's the average length of a LPGA tournament course?
I would say we play, the majors, we definitely play close to 7,000.
Oh, wow. Okay, so being able to hit it 300 off the tee is on the LPGA, that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, for sure.
And was it, because I don't think it's something you can learn later. I think it's more born.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you see some of the girls that have been out tour for a few years now, because the courses get longer, they want to try to hit it longer, they lose their game. It's so hard to, like you said as well, at an older age, where everyone on tour is still pretty young, but at an older age in your career to try to learn how to generate speed. I was lucky that I had a very good national team coach that already had some players out on tour that told me when I was, you know, in that learning phase, 12, 13, 14, he said, "And just hit the ball as hard as you can. You have to learn and, you know, able to generate speed. And, you know, once you grow older, you can kind of slow it down to 90% and we'll work on hitting it straight." But yeah, I think for me, that was definitely a big part in my success of being a long and straight driver of the golf ball.
Yeah, I've watched it. I think Instagram's your, is that your platform of choice for sharing?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just really amazing how simple you make it look. But anyway, so it's at Anne Van Dam on Instagram. It's really a treat. Like, I know it seems like such a tough, lonely sport because the distances you have to travel. And the fact is, you got to slip. Like, I mean, it's just you. There's no team. So when does the season start? The season started, LPGA season started.
It starts pretty early. We start, I think the first tournament, it's like the Tournament of Champions, starts last week of January. So normally the rest of the season starts in February and we play all the way through to Thanksgiving. And then me playing both the LPGA and the European Tour. This year I'll be playing over Thanksgiving in Spain, my last event there. So yeah, with playing both tours, there's somewhere to play every week. So that makes it definitely hard to plan a schedule.
And so any openings on the bag or anything for social leverage or my name? Just put Knut in our podcast or what is there room for a sponsorship?
There's always room. You just talk to Michiel and he'll figure it out.
All right, I got to talk to Michiel. All right, I'm going to work on something. This could be your year. You know, we sponsored Stockfitz way back in the day. My friend was good friends with Kevin Stadler, who lived in Scottsdale. And he had never won a tournament. And so we Stockstwit sponsored him because it was for the Phoenix Open, and we had his whole golf bag made for the Phoenix Open, and he beat Bubba Watson for his first and only victory on the PGA Tour on the 18th hole at TPC Scottsdale.
That's all.
So it was fun to be behind the ropes and have those pictures of Max and I. And what's so funny is he never changed a bag. He was very superstitious. So Stockstwit ended up on his bag for a couple of years. So it was pretty cool. Are you superstitious?
Not really, no. I've learned over the years that once you get going on superstitions regarding golf, you go down such a rabbit hole that, you know, you have to have four tees in your pocket and use this marker and have this club in this pocket and stuff like that. So, or some players, they cannot play with, you know, a Titleist 3. They only play with Titleist 2 or 1. And yeah, I very quickly said, I remember one time I played in a shirt that I thought looked really cool. In a final day, I was like, yeah, if I win, this shirt will look great on the picture. And I played terrible and I didn't win.
You jinxed yourself.
Ever again.
The good news is good things happen to people that come around me. I know it's like with Kevin Stadler. I mean, to put our name on his bag and have him win his one and only tournament. So I feel really good that there's some wins this year. And listen, you'll come back on the podcast and we'll talk about it. But I'm excited to play around with you, hopefully over Christmas.
For sure, yeah. That would be nice.
Yeah, we'll play around, check out the kitchen. I want to come check out the warehouse. And we're rooting for you. What's the easiest way to follow LPGA and our favorite players like yourself? What's the easiest way to follow?
I think nowadays everything goes through social media. It's a great platform to follow your favorite athletes. So yeah, go to Instagram and follow LPGA, follow the LET. And yeah, both their websites. I think it's LPGA.com and LadiesEuropeanTour.com. So there you can star your favorite players and follow them.
Okay. Well, Knut, any other questions as a golf fan?
No, I think, yeah.
We'll let her get back to
practice. I just
want to
know that I would be a caddy for Howard on that golf round.
Oh, you can't play, you don't think?
No, I'm just horrible. I would rather watch you guys
play. You really gave
it
up. You really did give it up. Yeah. I'm kind of horrible. I'm going to set up a great round with a couple friends and hopefully Max. And you guys are coming down Phoenix way. So we'll do something that's solidly for Scottsdale National. But I'm excited to hit them. I am superstitious, but don't let that make you nervous about social leverage. But things are going well. It's fun talking about some of these companies with you, and we're rooting for you. I'm so excited for you for this year on tour. And then when's the Olympics? When's the next Olympics?
2024 September in Paris.
So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
All right, so look forward to meeting you and playing around, and all the best this year on tour.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Knut?
Yeah. Yes, Coward.
We're just going to call you
Knut.
No,
it's Coward. That's
K-N-O-O-T. Coward, that's yeah. Funny. K-Howard.
K-Howard.
So, golf, huh? We've always had really good luck about golf. I've got the Golf Now, we had the Kevin Stadler story, and now we're rooting for Ann. It's fun to have someone to root for.
Yeah.
You know, I love that idea her boyfriend has. Very forward thinking, but
absolutely.
Her manager, he's not really a manager. He's just a regular guy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but he's great. He was, I got to have Mikhail on. He's fucking hilarious. So he is just a very successful developer, real estate guy, and just so involved in student golf. And I guess he just discovered and just took him. He's got three kids of his own, took her under his wing. And it's fun that he's cutting these deals and doing all this, living his best life. But it's fun to have someone, an athlete in our stable of LPs in our orbit. And we should do something. We got to put some kind of logo.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Bring her some good luck.
Exactly.
And we are going to hear a lot about Amish. If you go to Instagram and watch this woman hit a golf ball, she's a tall woman, super athletic.
She's like 5'10 or something.
Yeah, she's tall. She's super athletic. And, because I'm at Silverleaf, I see a lot of the Norwegian golf. Like, so many great pros came out of Sweden. And maybe not Norway.
Very few from Norway, I bet.
But Sweden.
Few from Sweden and Denmark.
Yeah, and Denmark. So a lot of them are ASU and at Silverleaf, and they hit on the other end of the range, which is the quiet end of the range, which is, of course, where Larry David goes, myself, to disrupt all these people.
The Larry
and,
David.
And so it's really cool watching these people hit balls. It sounds different. You know, we get up there and it's like, ugh. Like, it just, to them, it must sound like a train wreck when I hit a ball off to Hosel or thin. That's my shot is thin. And when you hear a pro hit and it just ting, you hardly hear a sound, but it just, the explosion is really amazing. Mm. So, all right, Ann, I'm predicting a victory this year on tour for Ann.
That'd be awesome. She's got it in her.
She's got it in her, right? Like, she doesn't have the distractions. She's got social leverage in her corner and sounds like a really good head on her shoulders. Knows what she wants to do.
Yep.
All right. Panic with Friends, Knutton Howard, or Newton Howard, or Newton Coward. We sit here once a week. Sometimes we talk to just professional golfers, but generally we're talking to investors, venture capitalists, traders, entrepreneurs, trying to keep a step into the future. And you can go to Spotify, Apple, www.howardlinzen, and you can find my podcast, Panic with Friends. Subscribe. You'll get one every week. See everybody next week.
Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.